Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david_lundgren@hancockbank.com, and we will take those questions at the end of the call. Today on the phone, I have with me John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, David Lundgren, Investment Director, and Luther McDougall, Investment Director. Dave, I'll go ahead and hand it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. John, you know, it wouldn't be an economic update call if we didn't start off by talking about Europe, and unfortunately, I guess there's more news out of the Eurozone. Late yesterday, S&P announced that the ratings of 15 of the 17 Eurozone nations, including France and Germany, were placed on credit watch negative due to tightening credit conditions and disagreements among European policymakers. I guess despite this bad news, the market is once again encouraged that there will be positive comments coming out of Europe this week. I believe there's a big summit coming up towards the end of the week. Are we reaching the end of this saga? Will the market once again have its hopes dashed?
Hopefully we're reaching the end of the saga in the sense that something will be done to take a Lehman Brothers moment in Europe off the table and prevent, you know, some sort of catastrophic financial collapse that really creates, you know, a lot of problems for us on this side of the Atlantic. The rating downgrades or the threat of rating downgrades is probably not surprising to anyone. And, you know, whether people have a AA rating or a AAA rating probably now doesn't make a great deal of difference because everybody is sort of in the same boat to one degree or another, and, you know, we will continue to be, you know, the, I guess you say, the best property in a bad neighborhood, along with the Germans and a few others that, you know, are in better shape than anyone else. But it does, you know, provide an ongoing example of how serious this problem is and how difficult it is going to be to solve in the long run. So far, what the Europeans have tried to do is figure out a way to solve the problem with liquidity injections and sort of tinkering around the edges without recognizing, of course, that at its base it is a solvency problem. And people have spent too much money and there's not enough money to pay off all the debt. And no one really wants to be in a position of telling their I'll say the politicians don't want to be in a position of telling their constituents, particularly in Germany, that, look, hey, to maintain our markets and keep the euro intact, you know, we may have to get the European Central Bank to take care of a lot of these bonds. And, oh, by the way, to make sure that, you know, that the bonds are neutralized in the sense that, you know, there's not quantitative easing and we don't have an inflation problem, you know, all you Germans are going to have to pony up and pay more taxes. And, of course, they don't want to do that, and Merkel doesn't want to do it. And the news out of Europe this morning about France and Germany and their disagreements suggests that whatever is done in the meeting coming up, you know, it will not be the final solution. And I don't think anybody even at this point or ever has really believed that that would be the case and that it would take, you know, a very long time to work it out. If you have read all of the stories we have from various research analysts and folks about how this thing can be solved, your head would be spinning. I mean, ours is, certainly, because everybody has a different idea, really, at least tinkering with different ideas about how this thing can be solved. But in the long run, what it's going to involve, of course, is pain and expense. And that's going to be the case for us, too, when we finally get our house in order. But, you know, at least we're moving down the right road, and at least it would appear that Germany realizes without the Eurozone as it exists, it would be somewhat more difficult for them to sell their products and services, you know, within that, you know, universe of countries. So, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, we're at least on track for an eventual resolution. But I think one thing everybody needs to keep in mind is, and unfortunately, you know, the market can react enthusiastically to something that really is not quite as enthusiastic as the market thinks, and that is that this is a long-term problem that will take a very long time to solve, and there will be no painless solution, or will they be a solution in the near term that will allow everybody to sing happy days are here again and, you know, normal growth will resume and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it still looks like, you know, Europe's going to be struggling from an economic sense this year, and that's probably going to have some impact on us. But at least they seem to be more serious about, you know, moving forward to a decent solution. So all the betting is that they'll come up with something that at least prevents a financial collapse in Europe and, you know, a lot of disruption in the markets. But it's just going to take a long time to work this thing out.
Okay. I guess from a better news perspective, here in the U.S., the unemployment rate dropped to 8.6%. Jobless claims have definitely improved. The ISM composite, which was released on December 1st, was stronger than expected. I guess, in general, the economic numbers here in the U.S. have been fairly positive. While we continue to hear about the Eurozone and other countries falling into recession, we seem to be somewhat immune to the slowdown occurring overseas. And you kind of touched on it in your last answer, but is it only a matter of time before their problems really begin to have an effect on us? Maybe if you can elaborate a little bit more.
It's generally accepted that Europe will be in recession. You know, maybe not every country in Europe, but Europe generally will be in recession at some point next year for an indefinite period of time. Some people argue that Europe is already in recession now, and nobody has really, you know, officially recognized it. Europe accounts for about 13% of our exports, which is not tremendous. It used to be more than that in the past. A larger proportion of our exports are going to Asia now. But Europe, with that 13% of exports, does account for something like 20 to 30% of S&P 500 earnings. So a larger proportion of earnings, a smaller proportion of exports. To the extent that Europe slows, that obviously would have some impact, you know, on earnings here and on our economy. Enough to push us into recession, well, that's probably not clear at this point. At least currently, the leading economic indicators don't suggest that a recession is imminent. And I just looked at some numbers this morning from the American Institute for Economic Research. They have unique and I think a pretty good series of leading indicators that have been fairly accurate over time in forecasting recession. Their numbers are deteriorating and decelerating, as is normally the case, you know, after you've been out of a recession for, you know, a year or two, but the readings are still positive. Notably, what is weak in their calculations, it would be consumer spending and unemployment. You know, those seem to be the weakest factors. Business spending appears to be picking up a little bit. You know, unfortunately, you know, consumer income is negative relative to inflation, which, you know, is never a particularly good thing. But it looks like we're still in what we would call a muddle-through economy, you know, with the prospects for a recession somewhere down the road. I mean, it doesn't look like we're about to enter a recession. One thing I would caution everybody about, though, in terms of just to kind of give you a picture of what normally precedes recession, there have been 11 recessions since World War II, and since they started producing quarterly GDP numbers in 1948, only in four of those instances was GDP negative in the month before the recession officially began, you know, once the NBER looked back at it. So the fact that you're in a positive GDP quarter really does not portend anything particularly positive or negative for the next quarter. So, you know, just because this quarter is positive and last quarter was positive doesn't mean that next quarter could be, you know, negative. Now, the indicators we're looking at don't suggest that's going to happen. You know, the leading indicators are still pretty good, but the fact that you're in a positive GDP quarter really doesn't tell you very much about what's likely to happen going forward. But at least the numbers so far are reasonably attractive. So, you know, it looks like we're going to hang in there for a while.
Okay. I guess other news in the month of November, the much-anticipated results from the Super Committee came in, and I guess to say they failed miserably would be appropriate. And the markets really didn't react much to the news. Would you have expected more of a reaction to this? And will any progress on our own debt deficit issues take place in 2012, or do we wait until after the November elections?
More than likely, nothing much is going to happen until after the November elections, you know, unless something really unusual happens. And this is probably going to be a very contentious political year in the campaign for the presidency. So we're probably not going to get a lot of good news on that front. Some people argue that politically, the super committee was designed to fail in the first place, you know, and basically just offered, you know, political cover or political, you know, ideas, I guess, election ideas for the competing parties. But and also, when you really think about it, all they were trying to do was save $1.2 trillion over 10 years, which is a drop in the bucket when you consider what the debt and deficit issue looks like. So it could be that over time, people have begun to figure out what that really meant, and it meant really very little. So, you know, we'll just have to wait for a time to see how we solve our problems. One thing I might mention at this point, when you think about, you know, the situation we're in now and the new normal, that term that was coined by the guys at PIMCO, it probably means, you know, a different international financial structure, a different banking structure, you know, in the sense that nothing will be the same as it was before. So as we go through this period, we're probably going to see a lot of things, you know, change and evolve that won't be, you know, exactly the way we imagined them in the past. But overall, there's too much debt, and the debt's going to have to be repaid or repudiated, as they say, you know, just written off, you know, and nobody wants to take losses like that. So the key will be, how do you produce an environment that's positive for growth while at the same time reducing your debt level? And that's going to be something that's going to be difficult to do. And we're probably in a better position to do it than the Europeans, because they've got 17 different countries, the primary ones in the Eurozone, to, you know, to try to figure out what to do. So we should be in better shape than that. By the way, the dollar is still rising in price. You know, the euro is falling, so, you know, we still got money and cash coming here. We're probably still relatively more stable. So, but anyway, it's going to take some time, it looks like.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the stock market a little bit. November, another very volatile month. The S&P 500 finished just slightly negative for the month at minus 0.2%. while the Dow was up 1.2%. So both the Dow and the S&P 500 remain slightly in positive territory for the year. At one point during the month of November, the S&P was down almost 8%. I think that was as of November 25th. And those losses were basically all erased during the last three trading days. Give us your thoughts on the latest market activity, and what is your outlook?
If you read the highlights that came out recently, you know, you'll note that, you know, we talked about, you know, volatility going forward. We've had a lot of volatility so far. We're going to have probably similar bouts of volatility going forward. You know, we appear to be in a GDP growth era over a number of years that's going to be somewhat below trend, probably on the order of, say, 2% is a guess, you know, rather than the 3 we've been used to in the past. You know, the 2% growth rate in GDP suggests that you're probably going to have lower profitability growth, you know, on average, unless profit margins can be expanded significantly and productivity can be expanded significantly. And, you know, the current numbers indicate that, and current trends in productivity and profit margins suggest that we're probably not going to get much better than we are currently. So to the extent that growth remains relatively slow and earnings continue to decelerate toward what you might call, you know, normal normal trends. For example, you know, nominal GDP, which is non-inflation adjusted GDP, generally grows at a rate somewhere between 5 and 7% annualized, and that's roughly where your earnings growth rate tends to track over long periods of time. So if we are decelerating back toward normality, and you assume that we're in a low growth environment, and you further assume that earnings growth next year, let's say, is in the single digits instead of the double digits that we've seen coming out of recession for the last couple of years, then we're probably looking at, you know, single digit prospects, I guess, in terms of the market. But with the market as volatile as it is, it's probably easier to make guesses about what's going to happen, say, 3 to 5 years down the road than it is from one quarter to the next. So, you know, I think we're still in one of those environments where, you know, our clients are going to have to get used to a lot of volatility along the way, even though at the end of the time we might turn out with some pretty decent numbers. But the bullish case for next year, as I mentioned in the highlights, is low growth and muddle through, and the bearish case is recession. So, you know, we're not likely to see anything significantly better than what we're seeing currently, although there are some analysts out there projecting 3% GDP growth for next year. But if you saw the data we have that indicates, you know, about 80% of those projections are wrong, you know, you wouldn't put a lot of faith in them. So anyway, that's sort of the story. It just looks okay, I suppose. And okay under these circumstances is probably a pretty good thing.
Yeah, we'll take okay. Luther, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about the bond market a little bit. And it was, I guess, not too exciting times for the bond market in the month of November. Both the 10- and 30-year U.S. Treasury yields were within 10 basis points of where they were at the end of October. But much like the stock market, I guess bond market action as of late seems to be tied to Europe. Treasuries rally on bad Euro news, sell off on good news. There seems to be less concern on inflation and economic growth numbers, which, you know, traditionally has been the big driver of moves in bond rates and prices. What are your thoughts on the bond market as of late and the outlook going forward?
Well, given what you just said and some of the comments that John made earlier as far as the economy here and fiscal restraint that is likely to happen in both Europe and the U.S., there's not a lot of case that can be made for interest rates going, you know, dramatically up from where they are. They obviously can't go down a whole lot more. We're approaching ultimate support. Given that all of those things plus the Fed's comments that they want to keep interest rates low, in all likelihood we're going to be in that same muddle through environment on the fixed income markets for, you know, the foreseeable future, at least the next year or so. The market these days is definitely focusing more on what's happening in Europe than what's happening here. I think that the dollars involved on a global basis are flowing back and forth between treasuries as the the best available option out there, and between Europe and Asia, but all the money still seems to be coming here. Now, you could probably make the case that if or when Europe comes up with some type of solution that the market believes in, you would see a short-term jump in our interest rates, but I don't think it would be to any great extent, you know, maybe a quarter of a point across the spectrum. But overall, we're still looking at the slow growth environment with a lot of changes that are going to come from fiscal policy over the next couple of years, hopefully, and that should keep interest rates relatively low for some time to come.
Okay. Also, during the month of November, I guess right after the announcement of the failing of the super committee, Fitch dropped its long-term outlook for U.S. debt from stable to negative. Should investors be concerned by this news, and do you anticipate similar actions from Moody's and S&P?
I think if you look at some of the news outstanding from S&P and both Moody's, they've pretty much said that what's called a JSCDR, or the committee set up to work on deficit reduction, what they did really didn't have any impact on their short-term ratings. And even Fitch, putting it on negative watch, technically that means within the next 2 years, there's a slightly higher than 50% chance that the debt could be downgraded. So, it's almost like everybody's expecting to see continued pressure on the U.S. credit rating also. We're not to the point that most European countries are, but, we're certainly not pristine as far as our own balance sheet, but, we're the best available right now. So I would say no, in a long-winded way, that I wouldn't be concerned right now about what Fitch did. It's pretty much already in the market, and everything right now is being driven, as I said earlier, by what's going on in the Eurozone, and what's happening to our ratings is almost a non-event. As you can see from when S&P lowered the rating from AAA down to AA, interest rates are only lower than they were then. Here again, driven by external events and not what's actually happening in our market.
Okay. Well, thank you, Luther. If anybody has any questions, please go ahead and send me an email at david_lundgren@hancockbank.com. And I do have one question. I'm going to throw this out to both John and Luther. It seems that the dollar's safe haven status results in artificially low interest rates and the lack of recognition of the U.S. debt problem. It appears to let us continue to kick the can down the road. Once the U.S. has to face its debt problem, will that result in a more severe reaction precipitated in part by the outflow of dollars back to Europe?
I guess that presumes that Europe would get its act together before we do. But the European situation is much worse than ours. Outside of Germany and France, and maybe Finland, the Netherlands, I can't remember what the other countries are. Outside of a few countries, they really are in bad shape in terms of solvency. They cannot grow fast enough to pay off their debt. At least as far as the United States is concerned, we can probably grow fast enough to at least hold our own for a while if we get the entitlement spending under control. But, to really predict exactly what's going to happen some years in the future is extraordinarily difficult. A lot of people think that, ultimately everybody will face an inflation threat that's like the Weimar Republic in Germany back in the 1920s. But the weight of debt internationally, well, certainly in Europe and here, is so heavy that, we appear to be in something of a liquidity trap, where regardless of how much money the Fed might make available for banks to use and lend out, if nobody borrows, you can't get an inflation cycle going. But, of course, nobody knows exactly, what the situation might be some years in the future. But right now we're, like I say, the best property in a bad neighborhood, and we probably have a better chance of getting our situation under control, given we are a hopefully somewhat unified country, whereas in Europe you've got 13 different countries and 13 different cultures and 17 different ideas about what should be done. So. I guess that story. One thing I thought I'd mention while I'm thinking about it, a little bit off on a different subject, and listening to Luther talk, it sort of brought it to mind. The market always anticipates the future, to varying degrees. And right now, if you look at some of the markets in Europe, like France and Italy, I happened to look at those the other day, those markets are almost back at their 2009 lows. And a lot of the European markets never rallied to the extent we did, coming off the 2009 lows. So European markets generally now are down, 10-15% perhaps year to date. I know it's much worse, than us. We're roughly even. So a lot of what's happening in Europe is already reflected in the prices of international stocks. And you could make the argument that if Europe managed to grow to any degree at all over the next 3 to 5 years, that stock prices are probably cheaper in Europe than they are here at the moment. So, I wouldn't get too concerned about European stock prices, at least not, good, profitable countries, companies in Europe at this point, because, a lot of what's going on is already reflected you know, in price. So for whatever that's worth.
All right, great. If anybody has a question, please send it in, david_lundgren@hancockbank.com. Okay, Luther, question for you. Can you hit *2 before you hang up to end the recording?
I will hit *2.
Thank y'all, everybody, for joining us today.